Every day, millions of users are commuting on the electronic highway. For you as a web developer, you want to ensure that your website is adapted to the needs of the modern user and that you're not putting up roadblocks, forcing users to take side roads. Not all side roads fit every car. Using a specific web feature will limit your user's flexibility to use their browser of preference. For instance, using CSS prefixes provides experimental functionality to only a subset of users. Or, having your users get stuck at the browser detection toll booth and limiting their experience. What if you could ensure that your users aren't facing roadblocks and can commute speedily on the highway? Using modern web standards, you can remove these roadblocks and optimize your website to accommodate all users regardless of the browser they're using. Take the journey with us to modern web development.
Hi, I'm Stan.
And I'm Nick, and we're technical evangelists at Microsoft.
In this video, we're going to talk about modern web development and what it means for you as a web developer. We'll get the views from an industry expert who will explain the challenges that go with modern web development. And then finally, in a number of demos, we'll show you what you can do to tackle those challenges.
Our industry expert is Christian Hauman, who prior to starting to work at Microsoft as a program manager with the Edge team, worked for companies like Mozilla and Firefox, where he was already heavily promoting HTML5 standards. He's also the author of a book on dynamic scripting in Ajax, where he heavily focuses on the clear separation of HTML, CSS, and scripting.
Christian and I will be discussing five topics regarding modern web design. Let's talk about modern web design.
Okay. Modern web design is a weird wording for me, but it's something we hear everybody talk about right now. In a lot of cases, it means responsive web design. It means that you're not looking only at one browser, but you're actually building towards standards and you make sure that your code is interoperable. On the other hand, a lot of modern web design also means that you're trying to build applications rather than websites and not the original model of like, here's my layout, here's my text, but you don't know what the content is going to be. And we've got lots of standards and lots of technologies nowadays where we can do this quite easily, built into the browsers without having to resort to any libraries or helper functionality that we needed to do when IE was the only browser out there.
As of HTML5, things got a whole lot less complicated in terms of rendering modes. We used to have a specific rendering mode for HTML4, XHTML1, and they all came with their own specific DTD or document type definition. On top of that, Internet Explorer introduced document modes. They enabled us to force a website to use a specific rendering mode, but that wasn't always the best thing. When developing for the modern web, you want to disregard all those specific rendering modes. The rendering engine will take care of the rest. Now let's see what that looks like in code. In the site layout of my demo website, I noticed that the current document type being used in every page mentions the XHTML 1.0 transitional DTD. In order to be compatible with the modern web, I can just remove the whole declaration, including the XML namespace on the HTML tag. Instead, the only thing I might want to add is the language that is being used in my website. Another thing I've noticed is that there is a specific line in there that will make my website render perfectly in IE8. If I want to be compatible with the modern web, I can just remove that line as well. By doing that, I just made my website compatible with HTML5 rendering mode and the modern web.
If you look at a website these days, in code there seems to be a lot of CSS prefixes in use. Is that still a good thing to do?
CSS prefixes were a very odd thing. In essence, CSS prefixes, every time you do a dash something dash, know that this is experimental functionality. This is nothing you can rely on. This will change from under you, and there's nothing you can do about it, and you can stomp your little foot and be very aggressive. But browser makers have done prefixes for that purpose. Experimental functionality of the web, as defined in prefixes, should only be there for developers or for a certain amount of test users, but not for the end users out there. Our end users are not our guinea pigs.
If I look at a website on my mobile or on my desktop, they sometimes look different. Why is that?
It is very hard to detect a browser. The user agent string that's supposedly telling you what the browser is as Patrick Lauke of Opera put it in the past, a pack of lies. You just cannot assume just by saying this is an Internet Explorer, so it will probably have this bug. Or this is on Chrome, so it probably will have this feature. So the only way to protect your code from future changes and to protect yourself from things breaking in browsers is to do feature detection. It's a very simple thing. It's like jumping into the river after checking that the river is deep enough.
So you heard that right. CSS prefixes are essentially a thing of the past. You might have used them because they enable you to do
and nice stuff in a browser that looks really nice, but know that they're based on things that you shouldn't be using anymore. For this demo, we have a project set up which uses some deprecated CSS prefixes that we want to get rid of. And let's have a look at what they are and how we can avoid them. To show you what CSS prefixes look like in real life and what it means if you're using them in a website, we have a demo site set up with some nice examples on how it actually makes your website look different based on what you're doing. For instance, on the left, I have the same website running in Firefox as it's running on the right side in Chrome. And in Chrome, you'll see that this button has perfectly rounded corners, where in Firefox, it doesn't have them. Let's have a look in code why that is and then what we can do about it. If I switch to my favorite editor, I'll try and dig up the CSS file for this demo site. And in that CSS file, try to find the button that we're trying to make look different. In that selector, I see that we have two CSS prefixes, one for WebKit, one specifically for Mozilla. And though they are set to exactly the same thing, for some reason, the Mozilla prefix doesn't get picked up by Mozilla anymore. So the best way to check if this CSS prefix is still required is to check if the selector is already available as a standard. To check if the border radius property is already available in the standard, I'll just copy it from my solution and paste it into a tool like caniuse.com. And what the tool provides me with is the current status of that specific property as it is being currently supported by almost all modern web browsers. Now, because border radius is already available in the standard, I should be able to remove -webkit- and keep it to border radius 1EM. And essentially, because the thing we had for Mozilla is exactly the same, I can remove it just as such. Now we have just one border radius property left for all browsers. We can have a look at what that looks like in Firefox. Looks great in Firefox. Looks great in Chrome. And looks awesome in Microsoft Edge. We probably all remember the times when we had to use browser detection to deal with different browsers, including a specific one. Luckily, those times are gone now, and modern browsers now have the tools that we need to address this properly. Now back to the editor. Let me pull in some code that will allow me to have a canvas in my project. The code I just pasted in basically is a canvas tag that will be visible in the page, then a script tag that will be able to fill in the canvas depending on what needs to be in there, and then a script that is specifically there to detect if canvas is already supported. Now, what you'll see in this part of the script is that we're detecting specifically based on the user agent string if there's a part of it that corresponds with MSIE. If it does, we know we're working in Internet Explorer, and we want to make sure that we're using a version of IE that has canvas support. As of IE 9, canvas support is built in. Now, this way of doing browser detection is something we want to get rid of. We want to replace it with feature detection instead. Fortunately, modern browsers these days have a way to check for canvas support as such. So how you do that is creating a canvas element in JavaScript, like this. Next, we can return the context of the canvas element. If it is supported by the browser, it will be true. Otherwise, it will be false. Essentially, this type of feature detection does the exact same thing as what we previously did as browser detection, and it's the best way of moving forward with modern web standards. In a world where we do modern web development, do we still rely on plugins, or what do we use instead?
In general, all browsers are realizing the same thing, that plugins have, as the name suggests, have been a stopgap solution. Plugins were the things that gave us functionality that browsers did not have. That's why we needed them. That's why we needed Flash. That's why we needed Java. The problem with plugins is, while it's powerful for the developer, it's also powerful for the attacker. Plugins were the biggest security hole in every browser out there, and still are. If what you do is relying on plugins, take a look at what the standards are giving you right now. There are a lot of times, I would say 90% of the time, you will find that you don't need that functionality anymore, and you don't have some third-party code on your site that you cannot control, which is always something that feels a bit weird.
So in terms of plugins, most of the functionality is available in different ways, in different APIs. What about frameworks in general? For instance, JavaScript frameworks that we all use and love. How do we treat those?
JavaScript frameworks were a great solution for a lot of problems, and still are. I mean, there's one every week. The only problem is that you have to keep them up to date, because the helpers of yesterday can become the barriers of tomorrow. Think of libraries as a helper tool that should always be upgraded and be stayed up to date, not much like the browser does. Then you're okay.
You heard from Christian. Plugins are really there to add functionality to the browser where the browser didn't really have that functionality before. The most common example there are videos. So the web initially was not meant to have video. It was just a bunch of links to documents. So let me show you now the sample website where we have some video incorporated in there. So I'm switching now to Internet Explorer. If I now browse to the About Us section of the website, what you'll see there is basically a video that starts playing. As you can see, the video plays really well. Let me show you in code now how this works. So I'm switching to Visual Studio Code, in which you can see here the traditional way of including video content inside of a website. So this is typically done through an object tag with some embedded video in there. If I now switch to another browser, so let's take, for example, the Edge browser. And again, we navigate to the About Us section to see the video. What we see there is it's basically some empty space. So the video is not really showing. Yeah. Maybe there's a problem with the Edge browser. Yeah. So let me try that in the Chrome browser. Again, we go to the About Us section and look at a video. Again, no video is showing. So we have there a message showing us that the plugin is not supported. So plugins are really useful for adding new functionality to your website. However, they have become really the biggest source of security problems. Hence, browser vendors have decided to not have plugins in their browsers anymore, because it was too risky. So let's go back into code just to modify our website and make it standards compatible. Okay, so first thing off, in here in Visual Studio Code, what we're doing is we're going to comment out this legacy code for adding a plugin. So we get rid of the plugin. And what we're going to do now is we're going to add the video tag. So the video tag has been added to the web standards, allowing you cross-browser to get video content inside of your website. Okay, so we add the video content. So what we need to do is we need to add the link to our video. So video / Contoso Coffee, which is basically the name of our video, MP4. And we're going to mark it as autoplay, so that as soon as we load the page, the video will start playing. Okay, so we save our file. And pretty much that's the only thing we need to add to replace the plugin with some web standards functionality. So I switch back to our browser, which is Chrome in this case. I refresh the page, and we should see now our video starts playing. Yeah. So let me switch now to the Edge browser, and again, refresh the page. And instead of this blank square, we now start seeing our video playing and pretty much the functionality that we needed. But maybe you're using some more advanced functionalities for which you're using plugins. Yeah. So typical example there is, for example, 3D rendering. Yeah. So there's great plugins for rendering 3D images, 3D shapes and forms inside of your website. So what do you do about those? Most likely, the web standard does not contain a solution for every single plugin. Yeah. So what we have there is the community, the web development community, has come up with a wide range of JavaScript libraries that really take into that functionality, that give you that functionality as part of your website without having to resort to plugins, making them, again, accessible to any browser that is there that may or may not support plugins, but still works across all of the browsers. Okay. Now, this brings me to JavaScript libraries. They really help you not having to reinvent the wheel. They contain a lot of functionality, allow you to wrap APIs that otherwise you would have to do yourself, which take a lot of code. Now, as with any external code that you haven't written, or even the code that you write yourself, you need to make sure that it's up to date. Up to date because there's issues with performance, can be issues with security. Similar to what you had with plugins, you need to make sure that you have the latest version. Let's see how this works in code. Okay, so I open up Visual Studio Code. What we see here is the query element function. So the query element function here, what you see is we're using the jQuery syntax. So in this specific website, I'm using jQuery, which is the most commonly used JavaScript library around. And specifically here, what we're doing is we're going to search the DOM tree and look for a div which has an ID of featured product. Okay, now this is pretty common. What you may wonder is, well, we could do this differently. So there's, for this specific functionality, searching for elements and items in the DOM tree, you could use the standard functions that exist as part of the web standard. Yeah. So what we're going to do is just replace this code. So I'm commenting out the jQuery code. And what I'm doing now is I'm creating a new variable, div, which I'm going to use on top of the document object. There is a query selector and query selector all function available for us. The query selector and query selector all allow us to pass in a query to search our DOM tree. And the nice thing is we can use the exact same search queries that we are used to with jQuery. So we can just grab the same search string and just paste it in here in the query selector standard function. And this will return us the exact same object that we had when using jQuery. So same functionality, just here we are using web standards functionality rather than an external library. However, there is still occasions where you still need those JavaScript libraries as part of your website because they contain functionality that you can't get rid of. So what do you do? As with any external code, you have to make sure that those libraries are up to date so that you can take advantage of the latest bug fixes and especially also the security fixes that come with it. Whenever you're in need of some specialized functionality, first check the standards. So is there a modern web equivalent of the functionality that you want to incorporate in your website? If yes, then you should resort to the web standards. If not, maybe there's alternative solutions by means of JavaScript libraries. So that way you can make your functionality, your website run across every browser, across every platform. Today we talked about modern web development, and specifically we covered CSS prefixes, browser detection, plugins, JavaScript libraries, and finally render modes. With CSS prefixes, look at the standards, try to use them if you can. Secondly, browser detection. Clearly, don't use it, switch to feature detection. Plugins, again, look at the standards, plenty of stuff in there for you to use. Fourthly, JavaScript libraries. Try to use the web standards where you can. If you can't use them, make sure your libraries are up to date at all times. And then finally, render modes. Know that the modern web only takes one render mode. There's no more use of document modes.
Thank you for watching.
Until next time.